Hey, this is Ed. So this is a podcast, is that right?
This is.
Okay. We're officially podcasting right now. That's awesome.
This is Straight from the Cutter's Mouth.
Welcome to Straight from the Cutter's Mouth, a retina podcast. At least once a week, we aim to bring you insights and perspectives from the world of vitreoretinal surgery. I am your host, Dr. Jay Schreather. Today, on episode 275, I have the pleasure of being joined by Dr. Bobak Mojtahedi from Kaiser Permanente in Southern California. Dr. Mojtahedi and his group wrote an editorial in March of 2020, actually before the major shutdown of the United States regarding COVID-19, about the role of ophthalmologists in counseling about vaccines. And that article detailed more talking about vaccines, just the pneumococcal, flu, and varicella zoster vaccine. Now, with the COVID-19 vaccine being rolled out as of January 2021 to healthcare workers, nursing home residents, and soon to at-risk populations in a targeted manner, ophthalmologists are confronted more and more with these daily questions from our patients and friends about the vaccine. And Dr. Mojtahedi and I talk a little bit about the role ophthalmologists can play in patient confidence in receiving a vaccine, the sort of information we can provide, how to cope with the uncertainty around the situation, and other tips and tricks for ophthalmologists in practice. Remember, you can claim CME credits for this podcast and many other podcast episodes on our website. And there's a link in the episode description that will take you to the American Academy of Ophthalmology website to claim CME credits. And relevant financial disclosures are always listed in the episode description. Straight from the Cutter's Mouth is now happy to be joined by one of our colleagues from the West Coast, Dr. Bobak Mojtahedi. You're going to have to help me with the pronunciation, but my fiance would kill me for messing up the Persian name. But Bobak, you're out in California where you work at Kaiser Permanente. And first of all, Bobak, just it's your first time in the podcast. We usually have guests talk about why they went into ophthalmology and retina. But just, I think for this episode, it's more relevant to talk about who you are, where you work, and that will kind of dive into what we are going to talk about, which is ophthalmologists and the COVID-19 vaccine. So give our listeners a little bit of background on yourself and what your work looks like today.
Sure. Well, thanks for having me, Jay, of course. I've been working in Southern California at Kaiser Permanente for the past 5 years after finishing my fellowship at Mass Eye and Ear. Before that, I was at UC Davis, where I did my residency and actually grew up. That's my hometown, so I'm a native Californian. One of the reasons I came to Kaiser Permanente Southern California was the opportunity to work in our research department and our telemedicine. And so in addition to my clinical responsibilities, I have an appointment in our department of research and evaluation, as well as in our eye monitoring center, our telemedicine operations. And in that capacity, I've worked a lot on big data and kind of population-based data. And I've also served on the AAO's Public Health Committee and as the co-chair for Kaiser's National Center for Ophthalmology Research and Innovation. And so in those various different capacities, one of the things that has really interested me is the interplay and the interface between ophthalmology and other subspecialties and our role in kind of the larger medical discussions that take place. And that's one of the reasons I was attracted to being a retina specialist, is the fact that we have the opportunity to work with diabetes and hypertension and posterior uveitis, all of which require us to still have a finger on the pulse of what's going on outside of just the eye.
Well, and let's tie into this article you wrote with a couple of co-authors, and this was published in AAO's an editorial, Improving Compliance with Vaccinations, a Public Health Opportunity for Ophthalmologists. And this was actually published in March of 2020, right? So it's interesting. This was published 2 weeks before the national shutdown from COVID-19. But now we're recording this here, January 3rd in 2021. This is super, super relevant all of a sudden. It was always relevant to talk about vaccines, but now it's even more pressing. We're being asked by our patients on a daily basis. So take us back to when you wrote this article. COVID-19 was, you know, being discussed maybe at the time you wrote the article, but wasn't the crux of what you were talking about. Why did you decide to write this article? And what were kind of the core messages for people who haven't read it yet?
Well, it is interesting that it ended up being perhaps more timely than we expected when we first published it. We came up with the idea to write this editorial on behalf of the AAO's Public Health Committee, actually in the fall of 2019. And part of that was during flu season, part of the discussions that took place within our own organization, and then with talking with doctors at other institutions, was what our role was in influenza vaccination, for example. At Kaiser Permanente in Southern California, our patients actually get flu vaccines in the ophthalmology clinics and all the subspecialty clinics. And so we found that that's a great opportunity to catch a lot of patients that might otherwise fall through the cracks for routine vaccinations. And it kind of occurred to us from just talking to our patients that there's still a lot of vaccine hesitancy and vaccine skepticism about simple and well-established vaccines like the flu vaccine. Talking to our pediatric ophthalmology colleagues, they get a lot of questions and pushbacks about the MMR vaccines and the pediatric vaccines that exist. So we thought this was a good opportunity to kind of lay stake a little bit about where ophthalmology might fit in the general discussion about vaccinations. The opportunity for ophthalmologists to educate patients, even if you're not going to offer the vaccine in your clinic, you know, we interact with all the big high-risk populations, elderly patients, patients with comorbidities like diabetes. In the case of our pediatric clinics, oftentimes kids who have pediatric anomalies or congenital abnormalities. And so we have the opportunity at the very least talk to our patients and kind of educate them because we are trusted members of the healthcare community to them. You know, retina specialists see these patients every month, I should say, for an injection. So we have multiple opportunities to talk with them. And over time, I found in my experience, you know, you talk to them every month when they come in for the injection. And even if they're hesitant at first, over time, you kind of build up their confidence and then they're willing to get their flu vaccine or the shingles vaccine or whatever. So, you know, I think we have a good opportunity as ophthalmologists to play a good role in this kind of vaccine public health issue in general.
And now we're here, we're in a situation where in most of the country, you're getting rollouts towards healthcare workers, nursing home residents, but most of our patients aren't eligible unless they fall into one of those two categories, but they're asking the questions. And we, like you said, we see a vulnerable population as retina specialists. We see macular degeneration patients sometimes monthly, and they continue to come in during the pandemic. I've been asked by several patients, I'm sure you have as well. And it's really something, you know, colleagues who are listening, this is something that's we're gonna be asked about. So what do you think, you know, people, the problem with vaccination, and we're not going to delve into politics, but somehow along the way, vaccines for COVID-19 and other things became a political issue. So the people have various opinions. You can have patients across the spectrum of opinions when it comes to vaccines. I think the first question is, and maybe easier, is if a patient brings it up, what would you advise? So a patient asks, hey, doc, what do you think about the vaccine, the efficacy? Should I get it? Are you going to get it? What's kind of your standard response to questions like that?
So, you know, I think it's a great question. And the COVID vaccine is different from the other vaccines that we talked about in this article, because in those traditional vaccines, they have a much longer track record of efficacy and safety. This is obviously something very new. And I think it's important for us to acknowledge to our patients the shortcomings of our knowledge. You know, sometimes you have patients ask questions about microchips and changing your DNA, and vaccine hesitancy covers a big spectrum. And the vast majority of patients don't buy into these kind of more far-flung conspiracy theories about vaccinations, but most of them have pretty legitimate questions. And I think we endanger eroding our confidence, their confidence in us, if we give them an overly rosy picture about our knowledge, because they know that the amount of information that we have is ultimately a little bit limited. But I think if you tell them on the weight of evidence, these vaccines have been safe from what we know, from the clinical trials, theoretically safe, and at least thus far have shown pretty good efficacy. And that when we balance that against the very large and very known risks of COVID-19, then we should have a high level of confidence that from a public health standpoint, this is a vaccine that makes sense for most patients to get unless there's a very rare contraindication. And I think when patients ask us, they are oftentimes reassured when we tell them, look, I'm getting it, my coworkers are getting it, the nurses and technicians who checked you in are getting it. And when they hear that, I think their level of confidence increases a lot. So I think it's important for them to know that we're not just pushing something that we ourselves are not confident in and we wouldn't recommend to our family members. And I'll say, you know, I think my parents should get it when they're eligible. All the doctors I know are getting it. Even if there are unknowns out there about it, and we should have a healthy level of analysis of that kind of stuff, ultimately the weight of the evidence pushes us towards doing it. And even my kind of skeptical patients, when they hear that we're getting it, I think that really builds up their confidence and they're much more receptive to the concept of getting it.
Yeah, you brought up a couple of interesting points there and you touched on. One is the COVID-19 is called democratization or emphasized democratization of knowledge in some aspects, where we have patients who they're reading the exact same papers or at least the summaries of those papers in the lay media. They may not have the background to interpret all that data, but the key kind of findings, they were like, oh yes, it's an mRNA vaccine. Oh, it was this effective in the Moderna trial. Whatever. I mean, some of these patients know this now because they're reading it, consuming it, because what else are you going to do in the space of a global pandemic? A lot of them choose to educate themselves. And the second thing you touched on was this idea of, you know, you can get into the nitty gritty of the science. And I guess it depends on the patient, but sometimes it's just as simple as you said, of just telling the patient, hey, I got it, or our staff got it, or I would recommend it for my parents, or if you were my family member, I would recommend it. So, I mean, that's an easier scenario, I think, where a patient asks. Now, the bigger question, I think, as ophthalmologists is, should we be, given the controversies around the vaccine, given the pandemic, given the fallout, given that, you know, we tend to believe in the science, should we be independently bringing it up, right? So is it appropriate? Is it something that we should? So if a patient comes in, for example, and they say, well, how are things going? Or just making conversation, should you bring up, hey, you know, last week, my name's Dr. Sridhar, whatever, I went and got the vaccine. I'm feeling fine. It was sore in my arm for a day. It feels fine. And it hasn't really been a big deal. I would highly recommend it for, you know, for my family or whatever. Should we bring it up independently, or is that outside our purview? Because I think historically as ophthalmologists, we've kind of stayed away from, maybe some of us have stayed away from sort of general medicine topics, but you touched on in this article, this is a relevant issue, and this is even more relevant as a pandemic. So what are your thoughts on that?
I mean, I think it's inevitable that we're going to be faced with it and have to talk about it with our patients. You know, we're wearing masks in clinic. We're, a lot of clinics are checking temperatures when patients come in. They're being pre-screened before they show up. So this is something that has kind of infused every element of not just our life outside the clinic, but our life inside the clinic. And I think it's inevitable that it comes up as a point of conversation. Like you mentioned earlier, it's not available to the general public yet, right? So we have time before it's going to start to come up more and more for the patient in the clinic. But I think sometimes we do our profession and ourselves as individuals a disservice by trying to divorce ourselves from these larger medical opportunities. You know, like I mentioned earlier, a lot of my friends who are hospitalists or primary care doctors, they say that they're jealous of me because I get better presents than they do around Christmas time. And that's because we see these patients so often every month that we have a lot of capital built up in terms of their confidence in us as decision makers and as clinicians. Sometimes I know it can be frustrating because patients will sometimes start talking to you about their leg swelling or their joint pain or something like that. And obviously in those times we say that's, you know, beyond my purview. But this is a case where this is a very broad public health problem. And I think it's important for us to generally start to massage this idea inside patients that everyone here is really busy. Ophthalmologists are seeing lots of patients. We don't want to be in the room for a long time with the patients because of the risk of COVID-19 and how close we are to them. But, you know, in these instances where we're seeing patients every month, every 2 months, you know, it's something that we can bring up and, you know, introduce the idea into their mind. And they will sometimes come back at the follow-up visit and ask a follow-up question or ask how we're feeling after getting the vaccine. And I think it's one of those things kind of like smoking cessation. If you bring it up multiple times and you kind of chip away slowly, you can slowly start to get people to come around on some of these ideas they might be hesitant about.
That's a great point about capital. I think we underestimate, as you said, how much patients trust us. Vision is really important to our patients. It's one of the biggest reasons a lot of us chose to be ophthalmologists. But I think, again, we still sometimes get so used to what we're doing on a daily basis, we take it for granted. You know, I'll give you a great example. I think if it's come up in conversation, I think there's a hidden paranoia. I've had patients bring up, for example, well, you were required to. It was mandatory, right? You had to do it. Because I think there's been a fear and some of this fear mongering with social media and other things about vaccines. Oh, they're going to force us all to do it. I think it's actually really important to say, no, I decided to do it. Or these are the reasons I decided to do it. And like you said, being transparent about maybe we don't know the knowledge or the side effects, but I think that's another really interesting thing I found is how many patients, I would say maybe 30 to 40% of the patients anecdotally that I have talked to the vaccine about to come up, they have thought that it's been mandatory and been kind of fearful of that. Because I think in American culture, we're very fearful in general of things being forced on us. So that's another interesting thing that is important to emphasize to these patients.
Yeah, you touch on several really excellent points. I mean, one thing is that social media discourse has really pushed us in this direction where, like you mentioned earlier, people have a higher level of education about things that are out there, but also anyone that has an opinion can have that opinion amplified, even if it's not based on sound science, right? So I think it's important for us to counteract some of that misinformation that exists. And I feel like once you tell the patient, like you mentioned, no, it's not mandatory. Yes, there are limitations in our knowledge, but overall we think it's very safe and, you know, I'm getting it because I choose to get it. You know, most of the patients aren't like very defensive or aggressive about it. Once you say that, you know, they say, okay, that makes sense. And the wheels turn in their head, and because it's coming from a trusted source, they'll believe it. Because most patients acknowledge or understand there's a lot of noise out there and a lot of bad information as well. And as a trusted healthcare provider that they trust with their vision, and oftentimes as a result, you know, their basic quality of life and their livelihood, you know, you have a lot of weight, your opinion has a lot of weight to them. And, you know, that's a great opportunity for us to make a positive impact for them and kind of the broader societal implications at large. And, you know, to circle back to the other point too is, I think if you tell patients an overly rosy interpretation of the results, you're going to lose credibility in their minds. If you say, this is for sure 100%, this is going to work, the pandemic's going to be over in 6 months and everyone's going to be happy, you know, they know enough to know that there are unknowns out there. And so I think if you're forthright about what we don't know, and, you know, you might need a booster in 6 months or a year, we don't know how enduring this immunologic response is going to be. You don't lose credibility or capital in their mind, you know, going forward if things change in the future.
Yeah, I mean, we live in a world where any Joe Schmo with a microphone and a computer can run a podcast at this point. So I definitely can speak to that. You know, so it's the final kind of thing to talk about, and not to beat a dead horse, but I think it's important to kind of bring this home. Again, we got a lot of ophthalmology residents and medical students and fellows. And then we have a lot of really experienced doctors, been a long time. And again, they all may have these relationships with patients, with family. They're, you know, some people are the only medical person in their family, and they're being asked these questions left and right. You know, I just think that, again, we can't underestimate the leadership role we can take. I think, you know, look, you talk about social media. I think doctors have taken that role. If you look, everyone and their, you know, medical cousin is posting a picture of themselves getting a vaccine on social media. And it's a little bit, I'm saying a little bit kind of with, you know, like kind of with a little humor, but it's actually important, right? So it's like one of the scenarios, like, yeah, you know, it's probably like the 3,000th picture of someone getting a vaccine, but you know what? It actually does matter, like you said, because there's so much noise and there's so much out there, you know, kudos to each person who does it because it can only help, right? It's only driving the narrative that it is safe. You know, I'll just end, Bobak. Again, you wrote this article talking about vaccines in general. And now, like you said, it's so timely because we are in a situation where in the next 6 to 12 months, the majority of the American public and the international public is going to be hopefully offered the opportunity to be vaccinated against something. You know, how do ophthalmologists stay time? What is our responsibility now to stay timely with that information, right? So we have a responsibility to stay up to date with ophthalmology and maybe general medicine to a certain degree, but that's kind of a certain assumed requirement. It's like, hey, I'm going to know the latest about retinal surgery. I'm going to know the latest about cataract surgery. I'm going to know the latest about injection trials because I need that for my day-to-day. Now, I think it's almost a requirement, maybe even as a citizen, but definitely as a medical citizen, you kind of have to know all of this stuff. It's not just something you read in the news. If you don't know this, then you're not in the position to help your patients because they're going to ask us these questions. So like, what would you suggest, you know, for doctors out there, resources? So if you want to stay up on this, have you, for example, maybe you already did that. Are you reading general medical journals more than you were before? Are you following something different than you were before? What would you suggest for the busy ophthalmologist who's like, you know what, I may have to stay up to date with news on the vaccine and rollouts and this new strain of coronavirus people are talking about? What are your kind of trusted resources?
So I think the CDC has a lot of excellent resources and they're geared to a very broad audience. And so they have good educational information, simple things you could print out and put to your in your waiting room or hand to your patients when they check into the front office staff. They also have very helpful patient intake forms. And so one thing to keep in mind is that the all this responsibility doesn't lie solely on the feet of the ophthalmologist. You know, there are opportunities when our technicians do the patient check-in. At the same time they're doing the medication reconciliation, you know, the CDC has like a really nice chart that they can just see like, oh, you're over 65. And as a part of the intake, they can ask, oh, well, have you gotten your pneumovax vaccine or your shingles vaccine? And then the same thing, the CDC website has a vaccine location finder that tells patients where you can go get their vaccinations, whether it's in local vaccine clinics or pharmacies or sending them back to their primary care doctors. So a lot of this work can be done pretty seamlessly as part of the general intake that our technicians do when they're putting drops in and reconciling medications. And then the role of the doctor is to, you know, answer some follow-up questions and, you know, provide some additional education. But the CDC has excellent resources. We have links to them in the article specifically, and they have a very good COVID-19 section of the CDC website, which has information both for patients and for doctors to stay up to date. And so I would recommend everyone to take a look at that And it's very quick, very accessible. It only takes, you know, 10, 15 minutes to skim it. But I think you learn a lot, both about the general medicine that's going on and about like the key points that you should be emphasizing to your patients and, you know, educating them on.
Bobek, thanks again for writing such a timely article. Thanks again for talking about it. And again, we may renew this conversation in a few months as news about the vaccine, immunity to new strains, things come out. To you and all your colleagues, all of our colleagues on the West Coast, please stay safe. I mean, we're in a time, we can talk about this January 3rd. This is a time where California is kind of in a state of crisis. So please stay safe, as you know, I know the numbers are pretty grim out there in LA County and San Bernardino, especially. So, and thanks again, and happy new year to you and your family. And hopefully, you know, hopefully we won't need to talk more about it, just to talk about, again, just getting word out to the public as it becomes available.
Right. Well, thanks a lot for the invitation, Jay. I hope you and your family stay safe, as well as everyone on the East Coast. And happy new year to you and everyone in Miami.
Many thanks to Dr. Moch Tahedi for joining me for this episode. Thank you, listeners, for listening. As always, you can find this episode and all 275 episodes on our website, retinapodcast.com. That's RETINAPodcast.com. Those episodes are all sorted by category, easily searchable in an archive going back for the 4+ years we've been doing the podcast. You can also access the podcast on your mobile device. We are both in the Apple Podcast and Android Podcast Store if you search for us. And you can reach us on social media via various channels. We're on Facebook, on Twitter, at Retina Podcast. And you can always contact us directly by emailing us at retinapodcast@gmail.com. Again, many thanks to our whole production team, including Drs. Louis Kai, Angela Chang, and Mike Benacasa, for putting together this episode and the accompanying social media promotions. Thanks to Dr. Moch Tahedi again for joining me. Thanks to the American Academy of Ophthalmology leadership, including Dan Mummert, for connecting us. Thank you, listeners, for what you do on a daily basis, the articles you read and publish, and the conversations you inspire here. This is Jay Schreeder, signing off.
Feeling.
This is straight from the cutter's mouth.